He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.
And Jay DeMarkin is going to start out this week's show with a whole bunch of information about safety items, I think, in one sense. So let's go, Jay.
Well, I actually, a couple of things happened this week that made me look at crash statistics.
Why did you crash?
No, I did not crash.
Okay.
Happily, I'm happy to report that
were
I
you
did not.
But you were out there, though, right? You were driving.
I was driving. I've been doing quite a bit of driving in the last week or two. But I wanted to react to one of your guests on one of your shows earlier last week, I think.
And it's going to be the Don Morrison, I think.
It would be the Don Morrison, a little 3-minute...
about speed.
Yeah. And he's totally right on statistics, close to 40,000 deaths a year. He was also very correct in saying things like tailgating account for 1/3 of accidents. I don't know how far he mentioned
Speed.
He mentioned speed, and this is where I have an issue, and I've had a long time. It's not just with what he was saying. There's nothing wrong per se with what he was saying. But yes, speed accounts or figures, and that's the word he uses, and that's exactly it, in 40% of all accidents. But there's a big distinction between saying that it figures in 40% of all accidents, and it's another thing to say that that is the cause of the accident. I think it's pure physics that if you are going to get into a crash, speed is going to make that the consequences.
If the car's moving, it's more likely
to
crash.
Two objects, or an object and a person. Yes, speed is going to make things a lot worse. But I think reducing everything to speed and reducing speed being the answer to the problem is just a simplistic way of looking at things. And you know, we look at, and I always tend to look at infrastructure and cars and all the things that can be done to make driving safer. But in the end, it really boils down to what are we going to do behind the wheel? And there's a lot of things we can do that will change the outcome of situations. And for instance, I always come up with this example that, you know, if you go through a green light and somebody goes through a red light coming from the other side and hits you, it does you no good to know that it was not your fault if you're going to be dead. The thing is, what could you have done differently that might have changed the outcome? And I think it's every day in driving. I mean, if you have somebody tailgating you on the highway or on the road, if you are driving slower than the flow of traffic and you're comfortable at that speed, obviously you're not in a hurry. If somebody's tailgating you, pull over. Do you have to? No. But should you?
You raise an interesting point. And the reason I'm saying this happened just on the corner off Calkinstown Road, and it was clearly someone coming out of the Sharon Country Inn, and they had Louisiana plates, and they skipped the stop sign, and it was only sheer magic that the car that was coming did not, they didn't smash, and I had a bird's eye view of the whole thing just because I was watching. Now, for whatever reason, the driver who was making his turn did not, you know, was a little just a little confused coming out and just the way that it was, but wasn't necessarily speed related. It was just, it was, again, pure luck that the two objects didn't collide.
Yeah, or this is where, not necessarily luck, the person who was coming or up or down the road who had the right of way slammed on the brakes
or turned
the wheel, did something to avoid a crash. No? Yeah?
My point is, you
can't avoid every crash, every situation. But by being
aware of
what you're doing and more involved, you certainly can avoid accidents, quote unquote accidents. another statistic, Robin can barge in at any time, of course, you know, the number of pedestrians getting killed is a number that had been going down and is now on the rise. And again, I think, and we all know the answer to that, it's distracted walking. It's walking with your cell phone in your hand. It's as dangerous as driving with your cell phone in your hand. So people getting knocked over are equally responsible. I mean, it doesn't make it a more pleasant statistic, but there are things you can do
everyone
not
can
to get run over.
Yeah, there, and there's an advert that's just so sad, and I understand that they had to make it. This is it's showing that the automatic car stopping feature is better, and it's a very attractive young woman looking down at her text and not running over. The car stops, so the dog and the child who are crossing the street don't get run over. And I'm sure that the director had to elicit that sort of silly look on her face at the end of it. It's like, oh, sorry, as she waves goodbye. But that happens so often that it really needs to almost be a commitment, a pledge of drivers. Like, just knock it off. Drive the car. Sorry, it's boring.
You know,
But it's not. No. But what I mean is.
Well, okay. All this is very good. Let's move on if we can. The issue is there are about probably 10% of us who are trying to stay as totally focused on the road all the time amongst all the drivers that are out there. And I would love to change the world, too, so that everybody paid total attention to the driving and probably would cut these accidents you've been talking about in half or more and more safety features and cameras and cars are coming to help us do that, except they themselves can cause confusion because you never know whether two of the sensors are beeping for two different things going down a road. And you have front collision avoidance mechanisms now coming on new cars, along with rear detection methods for backing up cars and all that. But, you know, it doesn't take away from the fact that we do need drivers to pay more attention than your examples are telling us we have on the road. I think the green light, red light thing is a very interesting one because the green light to yellow to red is not uniform throughout the country and or towns or states. If you've got a safety camera issue or set up because you've got a private organization trying to sell a town or a city some way to create revenue, the green to yellow to red happens much more quickly than the green to yellow red happens at our coming into Sharon traffic light if somebody's waiting on the side road to get in, and the light finally turns yellow because it's been tripped for a while. So the side car can get on the road. And I mentioned this when I got nailed in Providence, Rhode Island on a safety camera situation some months ago, and I went back and sat at that light and watched the mechanism timer situation on that light erratically change between cycles. And who set that up and who allows that to happen? But you know, going through a green light, you know, if the light is actually green when you think you're entering that area, it's very hard for you to know that somebody's coming at you from the side when the light is red.
Well, if you're in traffic that's traveling at 40 miles an hour, let's say, I totally agree with you.
And you don't know when the light's going to switch.
If you are at a light and it's red and you're just waiting for that green light to dart forward, that is when you are most likely to get hit by the guy going through that yellow than red
That's
light
true.
On the other side.
That's
and
true.
That is, again, to me, that is something that is avoidable.
Simply because if anyone remembers that thing about looking both ways before you cross the street, you know, you're meant to look forward and to your left and to your right before
pedestrians cars are on the street. If pedestrians get knocked over, there's something they did that they could have done differently.
Right.
And I'm not trying to shift
not
the blame.
Right.
It's not about
It's simply about being aware of your surroundings and everybody.
Would both of you agree that some of this could be improved on if driver education programs were better than they currently are?
Back to square one. We can
do the whole show on this.
The generic driver education program, in my opinion, is bunk as far as that goes. I think we've got some better safety driving education programs available in our broadcast area. Bob Green's program as one of them, going to a Skip Barber safe driving program. If I don't know whether it still exists, Skip Barber, but other programs exist, is another means which probably every teenager should be given the opportunity to take by their families, by their parents, or some other means, because those programs are far superior to the generic safe driving programs, the driver education programs put out in the states around here at any rate.
And I think I'm going on a slight tangent here. Maybe we can go on from there or move on. The one thing, cars are better than they have ever been. They accelerate better. They brake better. I think one of the first things I do when I'm coaching a new driver or a novice driver or even an experienced driver is know the limits of the car. Stomp on the accelerator. See, and power can be useful. If you have to make a pass to get out of a situation, power is useful. But pushing on the brakes is
also useful.
Is also useful. Yeah. And back in the, I think it's the late 90s, early 2000, Mercedes started having assisted braking on their cars. So, they figured in a lot of instances, people did not saw an obstacle and hit it only because they just didn't mash the brakes.
Well, most
enough.
Of the cars today have braking assistant programs. And so if you hit the pedal hard, the braking system takes over and will actually really pull your car down very quickly to
and
the point that you're going to go again.
And we've all been surprised on how well those brakes work.
And you ought to be wearing your seatbelt, too, when those go into effect, because I know that I've had a couple of my vehicles which I didn't realize had the braking assistant programs on, and I have come upon a situation where I did hit the brake hard for whatever reason, and the braking system took over, and it's quite startling when it happens the first time. So Jay's point about when you get a car, try out the acceleration program. Try out the braking program. Do an emergency hit of the brake pedal and just see what happens. But be sure you're wearing your seatbelt and
your passenger's not eating a donut.
You're not in the car at the time, or you're doing it with a passenger with whom you've spoken about doing a test on your car, because it really is helpful to know the limits of your car's performance. Acceleration is really important. You've got so many engine choices out there, 4 cylinders, 6 cylinders, 8 cylinders. They all have to, you've got turbos and non-turbos. You've got cylinder deactivation in some cases. And you need to know just how fast or what your car's accelerative capabilities are when you are in a line of slower traffic and you think you want to get around the lead slow car, be it one car ahead of you or, God forbid, 3 or 4 cars ahead of you and you still want to get around them. If you don't have a car that can get around in a certain distance, for these distances that you need to do to get around to lead the pack, you're in big trouble if you have an underpowered car and you think it's going to give you more performance than it can if you've got cars coming the other way.
All right.
Jay test drove some cars, and he's going to report on those, I think, in the last week. He said he drove 3 new cars to me coming over here. What were they and how were they?
Well, I drove a BMW X4. The X4 is the coupe version of the X3 SUV, the new BMW X3 and X4.
SUV coupe?
SUV coupe.
Okay.
I'm not a big fan of SUV coupes.
I'm not either.
But that's a personal...
They're selling.
Yes, they are selling. And an X4 drives like an X3, basically. It's got a coupe back portion of the car, but
was it an M version?
No, it was not an M version. It was the 3.0, which is a 2-liter actually.
Straight line six.
No, 4-cylinder turbo.
Oh, okay.
Well equipped, very well equipped, and it drove quite well. And it is, I was actually impressed. The car, the SUV, drives very much like a car. And the inside of it, the way you sit in that BMW, you actually feel like you're driving a car and not a truck or
an
SUV.
You are sitting higher.
I'm going to say this again and again. When you're looking at the road, if you're looking way ahead, the angle at which you're looking at the road changes only very marginally. That's, again, it's physics, right? It's geometry. The perceived advantage of being sitting high, I guess, is only true if you're looking down or right in front of you, or if everybody else is driving a smaller vehicle. But nowadays, everybody else is driving SUVs anyway. So I really don't see that
all the same.
As being an advantage. Okay. And back to that BMW, actually, you feel like you're driving a car. And it drives quite well. It was quite pleasant. And if you're shopping for a midsize luxury SUV,
do you know what the cost range is for that particular model?
No, but it's
40s, probably.
No, it's probably in the 50s.
That high
would be my guess. You know, by the time it's rolling out the door. What else did I draw? Oh, Subaru Crosstrek, very bland Subaru, right? Not a lot of power, so you got to figure out how to drive it without all that power.
CVT transmission.
CVT transmission. I keep saying it. I love it. It rides really well. The new Subaru
Outback.
No. The Impreza and the Crosstrek both ride on the same new platform that's used for all Subarus. The car is a little wider. It feels spacious inside.
And does everything very well, doesn't it?
It does everything very well, as most cars do. What was interesting is the owner of that car had turned off absolutely all of the safety features. Eyesight.
The blind spot, everything.
The blind spot, the automatic braking. All those features were turned off. And I left them off because I just, if that's the way I got the car.
Well, did they not automatically reset when you turned the car on?
Nope.
No, I thought no. That was going
how
on.
To do it?
This person is very techie savvy, so, and that's why I said, okay, this person knows the car.
It's the main. It's the
if
main.
If they did that, there's a reason.
And I'm a little surprised it didn't reset itself.
Not if you know how to do it.
No, because it defaults to the safety.
But at least it was very clear on the dashboard. All the lights were lit up. Eyesight was crossed out. Okay. The icons were clearly showing that none of these features were activated.
Right. Why did the person deactivate them?
He didn't want them.
I don't know. I didn't talk to the person. I was just curious.
I
did not talk to the owner of the car about
it. So you were just driving the car?
Yeah, I was just driving the car.
Third?
And you did not reactivate them?
No, I did not.
Okay.
Third is always, I from time to time I get to drive this fully optioned Range Rover. And it is.
Still?
It is still.
Your favorite.
One of my favorite cars out there. And, you know, As much as new cars with all the new tech and all the new features tend to isolate us from the road, actually the Range Rover drives like a car. I mean, and it's a tall SUV, if any. But it brakes well, it accelerates extremely well, it handles well, you actually hear the engine. It's just a great car.
It acts like something that you'd actually be driving.
I would drive that every day,
right?
And nothing else.
The reason I'm saying that is sometimes one thinks that the consumer gets lost in all of this, and one of the things I think that Range Rover attempted to maintain along the way is it's like, okay, look at the evolution of this vehicle. You're driving it. It's supposed to be high comfort, but you're still driving it.
You're still driving it. And it is comfortable, but it's not.
But you're still driving it, right?
Yeah.
And I just think that's a nuance that might be lost along the way. Yes.
Speaking of Range Rover, I just wanted to mention I read an interesting blurb by some reviewer or analyst in the auto industry. Jaguar, LJR, Land Rover Jaguar, which is currently owned by Tata in
India.
Oh, irony for, you know, the Brits, but let's not even go there. Tata is struggling with Land Rover Jaguar.
More Jaguar than Land Rover, I think.
Yeah, more Jaguar than Land Rover. Land Rover's got a great brand, great products, great margins.
Jaguar's been stuck in their quality control, I think, for quite a while, perceived. The only model I really have followed in Jaguar, I haven't followed the lower models, was the XJ series, which they have now discontinued, the XJ sedan production. Mm-hmm. But when I purchased and still own the 2004 XJR I have, one of the things I noticed about the vehicle was some of the cheapness of the door handle operations and that kind of thing. And then when I went and looked at the Jaguar XJR, I didn't find a whole lot of difference in feel with the newer models. And that may be some of the issues that Jaguar has been fumbling with, along with the fact that I have said on this show before, there's not a whole lot of distinctivity or whatever you want to use, synonymous to knowing that a Jaguar is coming down the road. I saw a Jaguar, and it wasn't an XJR coming at me. I knew the grill was sort of Jaguar, but I wasn't sure that it was a Jaguar. It doesn't have the leaping leopard
Jaguar.
Or whatever it is on the hood anymore
because
it's stealable. And it has a little badge in the thing which says Jaguar, but it doesn't stand out like the BMWs, the Audis, and the Mercedes do.
I think, and Robin knows this in all of his extended fleet of vehicles. His Jaguar is, I think, the nicest car, and it is a great car. And actually, speaking of the Range Rover, your Jaguar, Robin, drives a lot like that Range Rover, meaning it's comfortable, but it still drives like a car. You still feel it. You hear the engine.
Yeah.
It handles well. It's
what year
more
is your
than adequately
2004.
Fast.
Right.
Yeah. And it was the first year Ford owned it, and there was a lot of suspicion that the first year wouldn't be a good year for that car. I have been blessed with relatively, after some initial shakedown, warrantied repairs during my first 2 or 3 years of ownership. It has been virtually problem-free to date, and I do not have many miles on it because I don't put on more than 1,000 miles a season or summer on it so far because I've got too big a fleet.
Oh, well.
Exercise.
Oh, well.
Oh, well.
So a quick ending note on Land Rover Jaguar. There are analysts who think that it's ripe for a takeover by BMW, and BMW has owned a Land Rover before. And the argument was BMW has plenty of cash, and they've done as much as they can do with the brand that the BMW brand. They own a couple other brands like Rolls-Royce. And
they do.
But the BMW brand is, you cannot produce more cars without diluting the brand at this point.
Well, the question is, if they were to acquire it, would it dilute, would they distract them from keeping their current BMW brand where it is in the marketplace?
No, I think Ford had
Land Rover Jaguar for a while too, and they don't, as I said, the American car industry manufacturers don't have any durability.
Ford is like a carnival ship.
All the American brands are like carnival ships looking for investments in short term, and if it doesn't pan out, if they don't get instant gratification with a new product or a new acquisition, 3 or 4 years or maybe even 5 years later, it's on the block to be sold because it didn't do what their marketing team said it should do. But half of that problem is their problem, not the brand they might have acquired. And Tata has shown what they could do with the Land Rover, Range Rover, Jaguar series. But Jaguar has, as you have noted, floundered in those two brands relative to the Land Rover. And I talked last week, you weren't here, I think, about the Defender, the new Defender's out, and I've watched two or three 15-minute things about it. The only reason I bring it up is because I'm awaiting the new Ford Bronco, and all I could think about with looking at the Defender reinvention was the coming Ford Bronco reinvention. And I have yet to see an uncovered, I don't know whether you've seen one either.
No.
I haven't seen one. They're keeping it top secret. I don't know what it's going to look like, the original 1969 to 75 series before they grew up to Blazer size in the two-door version. We're about to find out.
Hopefully.
And
hopefully they come with it quicker than they did with the little pickup truck.
I think the Defender is going to be an interesting vehicle for Land Rover, but maybe a very narrow market.
Okay, speaking of not so narrow market, last but not least, Amazon's deal with Rivian.
Rivian is going to be one to watch. We went to the auto show and discussed that, and Amazon has ordered 100,000 vehicles. Do we have another Tesla production problem on our hands?
Well, there's going to be plenty of GM plants available.
They don't even have a panel van planned, but they've got $1.5 billion of investment money in that company, and they're building a factory, and we will watch it carefully.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Case.